Back here on a Friday, heading into the weekend, Congressman Roddy Davis is in studios. We'll also visit with Sergeant Scott Flannery, Lieutenant Jeff Shively, the Macon County Sheriff's Office. You'll see how they're celebrating Real Men Wear Pink this month. Company starts now.
Byers & Company, WSOY 1340 AM, 103.3 FM, streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
Good morning and welcome. We're back here just a little over a week away from Election Day, and it is going to be interesting to see who has any sort of accurate prediction on any of this. You know, we know that the Democrat side of things, they're hanging on to their Nate Silver, even though Nate Silver's 2016 predictions were a disaster for them. We have either reports of a tsunami-sized blue wave to, well, maybe it'll be a half a blue wave to maybe there's not a blue wave. I don't think that the pundits, the pollsters, I don't think any of them have any accurate ability to actually predict what the voters are going to do anymore, because I think a lot of voters don't want to participate in these. I mean, you get a call, you go, no, thank you. Doesn't mean you're not going to vote. Just means you don't want to talk to somebody on your cell phone. Congressman Davis, do you disagree with that?
Not at all. I completely agree with you. And you've got a history. you said the pollsters were wrong 2 years ago in the last presidential election, and you were right.
On election, was it Election Day or the day before Election Day? Beth Newhoff was here.
It was Election Day. I was with you.
Okay, yeah, but so we sat and had this argument early in the day, and I'm like, you got to watch Michigan. There's a couple of these things that just didn't add up to me. And if you've done this for a long time, I mean, you go back to the George Bush, Al Gore thing. You know, the late, great Larry Klugman and I were on the air that night, and we knew there was something wrong with that Florida thing. It didn't make sense, you know, and it turned out that whole debacle. I just think now what you have is a growing purple audience, just for a lack of a better phrase. They might be socially a little more liberal, fiscally a little more conservative. I think that's where a lot of millennials stack up. Mm-hmm. But they don't identify R&D in a hard way. I mean, you know, they'll vote for a person they like over a party. I don't think they like getting in Facebook arguments. I don't think they like to see people getting chased out of restaurants. It's almost an old school thing where you didn't ask somebody who they voted for, you know, that kind of mentality. And I just think it's hard to account for. And I think that the progressive side of the Democratic Party and what I'll call the remnants of the Tea Party side on the Republican Party are more out of touch with everyday people than they ever have been.
Well, they may be more out of touch with everyday people, and I agree with that assessment that there is a silent majority of people who I would call independents.
Yeah.
They may consider themselves Republicans. They may consider themselves Democrats, but you're right. They're going to vote for
You can't
candidate.
Explain to a progressive Democrat how in the world a union member votes for Donald Trump, but it happens.
Oh, it happens
all
the time.
But they just go in. I mean, they can't grasp it.
No. And you can't explain to somebody on the far right how a business person may vote for a Democrat either.
Right.
But what has happened, though, in the 24-hour news cycle, it seems that those on the fringes get all of the time.
Well, because the media is just as out of touch with the American people as those two elements of political parties we just talked about. I firmly believe it. Whether it's Fox News on the right or it's MSNBC on the left, they live in bubbles that they just don't understand. You know, I look at this immigration thing. You know, you look at the group of people that's, you know, coming up through Mexico. And it's really easy to just sort of scare Americans and go, there's terrorists hidden in there. There's cartel people in there. There's also a whole lot of people in there that just want a better life. And I think this element, this conversation explains the problem with these two extreme, you know, one over here is like no ICE, no borders, let anybody in. You can't do that. You got to have a rule of law. This other side just uses it as a fear hammer to like hit home red meat politics. And they're both wrong.
Well, both sides like to hit on those things, and both sides like to take advantage of what's in the news. And
life's gray. Life isn't red and blue. It's gray. And that's the way most people live their lives.
Well, when you talk about what's happening, though, with this caravan, that's not the way to legally come in and claim asylum.
Of course it's not, but that doesn't mean that everybody in that caravan is a bad human being or is intent to kill people.
Nobody should say that, but that's not the process that we should use. We've had chances to fix our broken immigration process to not only build a border structure, because it's not just about illegal immigration, it's about illegal drugs, illegal guns, human trafficking. And there are places, even Howard Buffett would tell you, that need to be built along along that southern border.
But you know what Howard Buffett will also tell you, and I've had this conversation. Mm-hmm. We had this conversation on the air. The podcast is available at nauticare.com. That the last thing we need in the border argument is more politics, because the political partisan crap is what's ruining having an actual conversation about what to do.
And that was going to be my point. The far right and the far left have hijacked the immigration debate. And I saw when I voted for two immigration reform bills that had good things in there for Republicans, some good things in there for Democrats that they've clamored for. But we didn't get any Democratic votes, and we didn't get enough Republican votes, because the far right and the far left have hijacked this issue that is very important to this country, because they want to just play politics with it. And it's sad, because we need to fix the system we have.
All right. So let's talk about some of the things that are happening in your campaign. You've had some debates now. How many?
Three.
How did those go? We have podcasts, by the way, of the one that was at Millikan University a week or so ago, available at nauticare.com. It seems to me like I get inundated with emails from your opponent about all the lies you tell. How does it go when you're in person talking to each other, for an hour?
You know, it actually puts out our clear differences. Also puts out some areas where we come to some agreement. But it's great to be able to stand up on stage and personally respond to these attacks that have been coming at me since my opponent even announced her candidacy. I haven't been called out like she had for grossly mischaracterizing some of the statements I made to try and help protect sexual harassment victims in Congress, like she was by her own local paper and groups supporting her. So we're able to discuss these issues. I'm able to stand up and defend myself and defend the votes that I've cast to protect pre-existing condition coverage, and at the same time help families like the Stacys here in Macon County who need premiums lowered, so in case they ever get diagnosed with a deadly disease, that they're able to pay for their treatment.
I don't claim to have an answer about campaign finance, and I don't begrudge people raising the money they raise, because if it's within the rules, that's the rules. I personally believe if I write a $25 check, I'm a special interest. I think anybody that gives a candidate money is a special interest. But when these outside groups, if you search Rodney Davis or Betsy Dirksen Londrigan, the first two websites that come up are an liberal Betsy Londrigan. I mean, that's the first, because of search optimization. And then the first one that comes up for you is keepthemaccountable.com, where they've got a big X through your head, and Representative Davis is bad for Illinois.
Let me see that X.
When the outside groups are controlling the flow of information, so that if an honest person wants to Google either you or your opponent, I mean, you would think, okay, we've got at our fingertips the ability to find out about candidates, find out their positions. Your website isn't the first thing that comes up. Her website isn't the first thing come up. It's outside interest groups creating websites about both of you.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's what campaigns have become. The good news is, in about 10 days, when you do a Google search for me, my website will pop up near the top, because these will be gone. And then we'll roll into another campaign year.
All right, but tell me about how you decide your messaging. I mean, am I really going to vote for you because of a hat that was owned by Lincoln or not owned by Lincoln?
Well, this issue got a lot of attention in the media not too long ago.
Yeah, but she had nothing to do with buying this hat.
No, it's not about buying the hat. It's about, when did people know that the hat may not be valued at the $6 million plus versus the $15,000 it was before? And then who in that organization, as part of the senior staff, which my opponent was, who made sure that the FBI came walking in disguised as a media crew to try and test its authenticity? Was there a cover-up, and was there still request for taxpayer dollars to be used to bail out the balance of the loan that was used to buy this hat? I mean, this is so serious that even the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum director stepped away from anything to do with the foundation. This isn't going to be investigated during this campaign. This is going to be investigated in a bipartisan way by the Illinois House and the Senate.
All right, is it a fair criticism to say, though, that that ad is a way to attach Mike Madigan to your opponent?
Well, there are plenty of other ways to attach Mike Madigan to my opponent. She signs joint fundraising agreements with him.
Yeah, I get that. We're talking about the United States Congress, not the state General Assembly.
When Mike Madigan's the head of the Democratic Party of Illinois and they're funding all the negative mail attacks against me, that's a relationship.
Okay. But you also know he has very high negative numbers. I mean, and it seems like the Republican strategy of anybody running for anything in this state is to use Mike Madigan.
It's not a coincidence that I there's a picture of me standing next to Bruce Rauner in one of the ads that are attacking me.
Okay. What do you think about the governor's race?
I think it's going to be interesting. I actually think that it's going to be closer than what initial polls are saying.
Okay, well, they really had Pritzker up at one point, like 20 points. I mean, I the polls, I don't trust any of the polls. But if I do go to Nate Silver, now Nate Silver is, you know, if you go to 538, you know, this is what a lot of the mainstream media, you know, the New York Times, ABC News, this is their Bible. You know, this is what they said, you know, while they said Hillary was going to win. I mean, they have your opponent as a 3 in 10 chance of winning and you having a 7 in 10 chance. So the blue wave apparently isn't reaching central Illinois. Do you think these are accurate numbers, or do you think that the Londrigan camp claiming to have internal polling showing her only down by one, what do you think is closer?
Well, I can tell you when you look at the race, you look at internal, you look at external polling, we're in really good shape. I mean, I think we've got a 10 in 10 chance of winning, but it's going to be up to the voters. If you want somebody to go out to Washington who's going to vote for Nancy Pelosi for Speaker of the House, who's going to be a part of what I think is going to be disruption in Congress rather than working together with the administration like we have to cut taxes, to help grow our economy, historic economic growth, historic low unemployment, and also at the same time, because of economic growth, live up to the promises that I made to people who have diseases like cancer. We invested $5 billion over the last 2 years in NIH research. That is so that families don't have to have a pre-existing condition because they're going to get their disease cured before it gets to that point. And then also, we just had the president sign a bill that was bipartisan, an opioids piece of legislation, that brings $43 million to fight the opioid epidemic here to central Illinois, to the state of Illinois. And it also expands. It takes what we got from meetings upon meetings with folks who are fighting this epidemic right here in Macon County, right in central Illinois. And we took ideas and turned them into law, expanding Medicaid bed access for facilities so somebody wants to be treated for drug abuse, gets in, doesn't have to come back the next day and hope they still want that treatment.
All right, so let's talk about these town hall meetings or lack of town hall meetings. Your opponents beat you over the head with this. One of the questions that I will ask her if she does come in is, do you ever consider the fact that you're talking to a gentleman who was chased across the ball field by somebody trying to assassinate him? You know, that being in public today isn't. Now we've watched over the last 48 hours with this horrific, you know, whatever this is, terrorism. I mean, I'm perfectly willing to call it domestic terrorism.
It's political terrorism.
Yeah. The rhetoric has gotten so heated. And it seems like the left goes, well, you can't do that, but, and then the right comes out and goes, well, you can't do that, but. Where are the grown-ups in this conversation? And I include the president. If you're up at 3 a.m. tweeting and complaining, I just get so tired of him whining. Where are the grown-ups? You know, where are the Ray LaHoods? Where are the Glenn Pichards? Where are the people who understood civility was part of it, that the way this democracy stands, the amazing thing about the history of this country is that every 4 years, every 8 years, you have a change of power and you do it in a peaceful way at the ballot box. What has happened to all of that?
Well, I'm trying to be a voice of reason, just like the great public servants you mentioned before. I was up early yesterday on CNN to talk about how do we tone this rhetoric down? How do we begin building up a message that the majority of Americans just want to come together? We're not going to agree on everything 100% of the time, but we can settle our differences at the ballot box and not with bullets on a baseball field.
But when we talked to you, though, you know, right after that, you didn't come on and blame Bernie Sanders.
No, absolutely I didn't.
But that's what's happening now. I mean, almost immediately.
It is, and it's unfortunate. And that's why I try and be that voice to go out and say, you know, it's not Bernie Sanders' fault that a supporter of his came and screamed healthcare while he was firing bullets and shooting at me and my friends. Just like it's not the president's fault or Republicans' fault that some crazed lunatic has decided to send what look like explosive devices to Democrats.
But it is a political fault, the lack of civility.
Not only the lack of
civility, but telling everyone else to embrace that lack of civility.
Yes.
and to use whatever crass, you know, thing you have a problem with Trump to excuse more bad behavior. It's like, I mean, didn't anyone's mother teach them that two wrongs don't make a right? But that's exactly where we're going.
That's exactly where we're going. And what it does is it encourages the people who are really at fault for the two instances we're talking about, the explosives, the crazy lunatic that I hope gets arrested and put in jail for the rest of his or her life, should be the one that's blamed, just like the guy who's resting in a warm
place. But that doesn't mean
that
you guys should duck blame. I mean, because the rhetoric starts at that level. And the media, and it's not one or the other, but it is, listen, in your world, the political world, the ends have become, you know, the justification for the means. And the means have slipped and slipped and slipped and slipped. The outside money, the stuff that gets put out there. You know, politics has always had a mean spirit to it. I mean, you know, going back to the beginning of America. But the idea now that it is now embraced by presidents, presidential candidates, former attorney general, that say, hey, it's okay to shout people out of restaurants or bang on tables or pick up their food and throw it out the door or scream them out of an airport. This is not going down a good path for this nation. And it's got nothing to do with free speech.
No, it has nothing to do with free speech. And incivility is not something that should happen anywhere, anytime. I would stand up for Democrats if I saw them being harassed at a restaurant. And I would walk up and I would say, enough's enough. This is not what should happen. I've had people come up to me at restaurants and offer messages of, you know, I hope you lose. It's like, can I finish my burger first?
Yeah.
I'd be glad to talk to you. I've been spat on in the streets of Springfield by some lady who was screaming at me over a difference in healthcare policy. I mean, these are not ways to have productive conversations, just like it's not a productive conversation to have with somebody who's shooting bullets at you. These are serious discussions, and we can come together as a country, but we have to be willing to sit down and talk. And I'll tell you, Brian, the majority of what we do in Washington is done on an overwhelming bipartisan basis. Some of my best friends are on the other side of the aisle. Jimmy Panetta from California was just visiting my district just over a month ago, and we went and talked to the next generation at three different schools in three parts of my district to at least explain to them that Republicans and Democrats actually like each other in Washington. Don't believe everything you say in here.
Congressman, I don't disagree, and I don't have a hard time believing that, but then you got to do something about your leadership, and so do the Democrats, because that isn't the narrative. That's not who's on TV screaming at each other. It's your leadership. You know,
I would argue it's not even our leadership on both sides. Sometimes it's members who represent different constituencies.
The visible members of your party, the people who seek out the attention on cable TV. You know, it doesn't help you when Mitch McConnell goes out and brags about gutting Obamacare. I mean, does that help you?
No, it obviously doesn't. But that's why I come on shows like yours.
No, I know that. But I'm saying, but the drumbeat of the national narrative. I mean, I'm not going to let the politicians escape responsibility
for
this narrative. Because I think at the end of the day, there are vast number members of your party and the other party that really don't have firm beliefs about anything. They just love keeping America divided because it raises money, it gets people to the polls, and as long as they can keep us divided, then they stay where they are. And you know what the amazing thing is? I heard Mike Rowe the other night, and it was such an eye-opener for me, because you know where I don't have any of this? Is the rest of my life. It's just media and politics. When I leave here today doing this show, the rest of the meetings I have will be about doing things in the community, and no one cares about politics. It'll be about getting things done. No one's arguing or spitting on each other. It's only in this realm.
Did you meet him when he was at Farm Progress a couple years
ago? I did.
Isn't he the nicest guy?
He's a great guy, and his message is finally resonating with America.
It really is. I invited him to a couple of State of the Unions before, and we couldn't work it out.
Yeah.
But he, good guy, vocational education, getting kids into the trades, getting people retrained to get into the trades. That's the message that I send when I'm a member of Congress that doesn't get the coverage. And that's why I call out this bad behavior and incivility from all sides, Brian. And that's why I need to get reelected so I can continue to spread this message, because a lot of times it's going to take a lot longer because I don't get asked to be on those 24-hour news cycle shows because they know I'm not going to sit and scream at the other side. And at some point, the American people are going to be the ones to stand up and demand, we want news, not just incivility.
If media's got the national media, and I put most of it on cable TV. I know talk radio gets, so, you know, you do what you want with that. I will take responsibility, you know, but it's it starts with the people who are on both sides of the aisle that feed off of that. And they are. You're telling me Maxine Waters doesn't care about anything. She loves TV cameras.
Well, one thing you can do is You go back to the day of that baseball shooting. I made a commitment when I got back to the Capitol to go talk about my experience because people started asking. And not more than an hour after watching my friend Steve Scalise get put into a helicopter and rushed off to be saved, an hour after watching Matt Mica lay on the ground bleeding out in his chest, I stood in front of the American people on national news and I said, all sides need to tone this down. There's not a partisan blame when it comes to incivility and when it comes to rhetoric. And everybody is at fault for allowing those on the fringes to have a voice that is much louder than those of us who just want to get things done.
Yeah, and this is on every side. I mean, I'm watching this rally, the day after, former Secretary of State Clinton, somebody tries to send a bomb to her. And what are they doing at the Trump rally? Chanting, lock her up.
It's wrong.
I know. But we've got to start with the media. We've got to start with politicians. All right, we've got a couple of minutes left here. Do you feel like these town hall meetings or the charge that you're not accessible? I mean, I've said this publicly. I'll say it to your face. I have never found accessibility to be a problem with you. You are always available to us, but we're the media. Maybe it's not the same. Do you feel like you're there in a transparent way for your constituency?
Absolutely, I do. As a matter of fact, I hold open office hours where I've sat down with political opponents and supporters of my opponent for hours upon hours talking about differences. I mean, there are areas I'm sure we could find agreement, but a lot of times, people who are politically opposed to you want to talk about where you disagree. But our open office hours gives us a chance to sit down with individuals who need help breaking through the bureaucracy of Washington, and we've done 35 of these over the last 2 years, hours upon hours in our small communities. I send invitations out to everybody in those small communities to come see me, come talk to me, whatever you're doing. It's free. It's open to the public. We're coming to you. And, those are where we get requests, like a request from Patricia in Urbana, who, because of a data entry error, lost her Social Security and Medicare benefits. And it's my team that worked diligently to get those benefits back. Not everybody wants to talk about an issue they're having at the federal government in an open, in a meeting where the far right and the far left are screaming at each other. They want to sit down. They want to get to know their elected official face to face and personally. That's why I spend more hours doing what I do. We also respond to thousands upon thousands of requests that constituents send to our office every single week. And that's part of being a member of Congress. It's not just about voting. It's not just about, it's not just about who the leaders of our party are. It's about serving the constituents that I'm blessed to be able to represent. And that I'm always going to be accessible. And we hold meeting after meeting outside of these open office hours on a regular basis with people who call and say, I want to sit down to discuss this issue. Janelle Norman and the NAACP here in Decatur, they don't need to come to an open office hours. They know that we're going to get a time, we're going to sit down, and we're going to talk about issues like the Second Chance Act that are very important to them and very important to me.
All right, Congressman Rodney Davis, are you ready for this election to be over, just from a human level?
I think the American people are ready for this election to be over from a human level.
Amen. And I count myself at the very top of that list. Good luck to you on Election Day. How do people get a hold of your campaign if they'd like to volunteer, donate, whatever, these last few days?
Well, thank you, Brian. Go to electrodney.com. You give us a call. Go to our website. I really want to make sure that we get every voter to the polls. This is a crucial election. It's going to determine if we continue the successes that we're seeing with working with this administration or if it's going to come to a stop. That's why this election, the battlefield for who the Speaker of the House is, starts right here in Central Illinois.
Congressman Rodney Davis, we appreciate it. Good luck to you, sir. We're going to take a break for the news. When we get back here, we'll visit with the folks from HSHS St. Mary's. The Real Men Wear Pink campaign is underway. We'll have a couple sheriff's deputies in. Stay tuned.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. An 11th and a 12th package have been found similar to the explosive devices sent this week to other critics of President Trump, one in Florida.